This is Gabriel Carrillo from the EdTech Bites podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you are listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Jeanne Bullhouse serves as the Instructional Technology and Media Specialist Liaison for a school system in the state of Georgia. Today we're talking about future-ready schools and future-ready school librarians. Lots to learn. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Jeanne Bullhouse started her career in education in 1994 in her Middle Tennessee hometown. She moved to Georgia in 2003 and immediately fell in love with professional learning. She served as a classroom teacher, computer skills teacher, and later as a school-level instructional technology coach. She holds advanced degrees in the field of curriculum and instructional technology and is certified in the service fields of instructional technology and as a media specialist. Jeanne currently serves as the instructional technology specialist and media specialist liaison for Whitfield County Schools in Georgia. Her heart is in building relationships and empowering teacher leaders. You can find Jeanne often at local ed camps and coffee EDU meetups, where she loves talking with and learning from other educators. Online, you'll find her on Twitter as @GABOLHUIS. Try that one again for everybody. It's on Twitter. It's @GABOLHUIS. There we go. And I'll have that in the show notes so you don't have to handwrite it down or anything right now. So anyway, here we go. So say hi to everyone, Jeanne.
Hello, everyone.
Jeanne, thanks for joining me today. And before we get into future-ready librarians, let's talk about this. When working with teachers and technology, what is a common issue that you face?
I think the biggest issue that we face is that teachers still see technology as something scary, as something different, or something additional to what they're doing in the classroom. And we're far into the part where technology should be ubiquitous. It should be something that we should feel confident about. So I like to give them just enough knowledge to feel confident in front of that group of kids, and then let them run with it. Because so many times the students have another idea or a way to use technology that we wouldn't have thought of. So if they'll just be brave enough to stand up there and try it, lots of times the lesson runs itself.
And that's awesome. Because, you know, it's funny, and this will really date me a little bit, but back when schools started really outfitting, school systems start outfitting the entire system with computers and things like, you know, just completely outfitting their schools with computers, one of the things that lots of them started figuring out is that some of their staff saw the computer as pretty much a big paperweight.
Right.
And hopefully today we don't have a lot of that, but do you sometimes run into people not exactly using the technology the way it could be used?
Oh, often. And I think that's because of the way that we've trained. We've trained people in computer skills rather than in teaching with technology. So we kind of kept it in a capsule. In fact, that was a big theme at ISTE this year. I didn't go to ISTE, but as I followed all the other people who weren't going to ISTE, I saw that there's even a movement to get rid of the words instructional technology, because now it's just instruction. We're 18 years into the 21st century, so it's time to stop calling it something else.
That's actually a pretty cool topic for discussion right there. Because I think the more you make it sound different, then it is different to some people. And hence, kind of going back to something you said before, they feel like you're making them do something else or adding something on top of their plate. I don't know.
Right.
But that's pretty interesting. So let's let me get back on track, you know, because I could talk about that part just forever. In your bio, I share that you can often be found at ed camps and Coffee EDU. I'm familiar with ed camps, but not Coffee EDU. Tell us a little bit about what you like about these learning opportunities and share a little bit about Coffee EDU, all right?
So Coffee EDU was started by Alice Keeler, and all the Google and math people know Alice Keeler. Alice Keeler just I'm assuming it started, she woke up one morning at 6:30 and said, let's have coffee. And it was, it started at CUE at the conference. So it was originally called Coffee Q. And she changed it to Coffee EDU. And she kind of just started this tradition of, hey, I'm at this conference. Let's meet for an hour, say 6:30 to 7:30 and just talk. And so it became one of the unconference movements. The unconference movement is pretty big. And it's teacher driven. So to start a coffee EDU, it's really easy. You find a coffee shop that doesn't mind if you take up 6 or 10 seats and you hang up a sign that says, we're going to meet on this day for an hour, and you show up and see who comes. And you literally set the timer for 1 hour and there's no agenda. It's very much like Ed Camp. Just, it's an organic conversation. We do have a regular one here in Calhoun that's very well attended. We usually have 6 or 8 people at this one now. And it takes us out of the silo. It lets us, you know, just meet and collaborate with people. Sometimes we talk about education. Sometimes we talk about our personal growth. You know, people who are struggling with grad school come in. There's no dress code. There are no titles. There's no stage. So if you can make it, great. If you can't make it, we'll look for you next time.
That's awesome. So, you know, not to put you on the spot, but I am. What's a recent topic you might have had?
Well, we don't have topics. We literally just start talking. So some of the things that have come up lately, we had a meeting. In fact, our group was so sad that we weren't meeting. We had about an 8-week gap. We had met at the 1st of June and then we were going to meet at the end of July. And they're like, we need another meeting. So we kind of fit another one in between there. And we just were talking about what we were doing this summer to renew, you know, plans for balancing our lives in the fall, because we found that we were all very much out of balance at the end of the year, you know, and just kind of maybe holding each other accountable to that next year. Like, are you resting? Are you reading a book? Are you taking walks? Are you taking care of your health so that we can serve better?
Oh, excellent. Very cool. It's neat, these types of organizations that have popped up where they're really kind of organizations that bring educators together to talk about what's on their mind and kind of work through challenges or seek out advice and just talk, which is an awesome way to learn from each other.
I think we truly are better together.
That's awesome. What we're, you know, kind of in this realm right now, do you have a favorite app or a podcast? And if so, what are they and what do you like the best about them?
My favorite app, hands down, is Google Keep, because Google Keep encompasses every area of my life. I'm a mom. I work at church. I have other things that are going on. So if I find an idea about, you know, how to finish the basement and ceiling, I can go to Home Depot and put that in Google Keep. I can tag a location that tells me to get milk at Kroger when I pass by, whatever I'm doing. So I really, really like Google Keep. I like how it integrates now with Google Docs and Google Slides. So if I go to a media center and I see a really cool display and I want to share it with the whole group at our next collaborative meeting, I can just take a picture and then open up Google Slides and pull that picture right into that slide deck. So I really like how Google Keep is kind of like the gopher for all of the different Google apps. So if you know me very long, I'm going to try to get you to install Google Keep on your phone.
Very cool.
And in podcasts, I've been a longtime fan of Cool Cat Teacher. 1 year at GATC, my group sat up next to her group and I met Vicky and she was so nice. And then I realized, oh my goodness, that's Cool Cat Teacher. I'm not a big podcast listener because I like to listen to music. So I tend to listen to podcasts based on topic. So I listened to your recent podcast because I saw Bucky on there. Bucky's Northwest Georgia Reese's director, and we've been friends for years. So I've been listening, you know, to things as topic based rather than show based.
Gotcha. And I appreciate you there giving mine a plug since I am talking to you right now.
Yes, it's awesome.
Thanks. That one with Bucky and Brian was awesome. They got a lot of good reaction there. It's neat that you work with him because he's been very helpful in helping me do different things as I get acclimated to different aspects of technology. So that was a bunch of gobbledygook, but he's awesome. So very cool. So that's neat that you like the topics. And I love the idea of getting focused on Google Keep, because to some people, it's like they haven't discovered the magic of it yet.
Right.
So let's shift now into our topic for the day. We're going to talk future ready schools and specifically future ready librarians. So basically, what's a future-ready school?
Well, a future-ready school, I think, is one that's looking ahead at what students are going to need to learn. And sometimes I see a troubling trend in that we go to businesses and say, what do you need students to do? And then we're trying to make kindergartners build models out of Legos so that they can go work in a factory or work with robotics. When honestly, we need to look at more than just the business world. We need to look at the whole child. And I think that ESSA has helped with that. I think that the new Georgia direction, the direction that we're going with the new literacy grants and just all of the conversations have, we kind of, the pendulum is swinging back to the whole child. And with Future Ready Schools, I think we have to do that. We're seeing more students with learning disabilities, more students with coping disabilities. Teachers are learning how to teach mindfulness. I think there's a huge picture there that we're finally starting to focus in on, where we study, you know, we prepare students to study. We prepare them to be musicians and artists and poets and engineers. And we support them, though, as individuals, because when you are a strong individual, then you can have the direction that you need to go. And libraries are the place where the whole child truly can be serviced. The whole child can be, their needs can be met, because you have a stage, you have a, you know, you have a place for that child to go and feel like they're important. So when you start talking about Future Ready Schools, I think you start looking at what your school needs, and then you ring that out to the district, ring that out to the region, ring that out to the state. So it takes a lot of vision and it takes a lot of change. And I think Future Ready Schools gives everybody lanes. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to put these things in your scope and we're going to put these things in operations scope. And so you go out and make sure that the students' needs are covered here, and operations is going to make sure that they're safe and that we have, you know, current technology in the buses and things like that. So that's what I think the beauty of it is that it doesn't tell you what to do. It tells you how to think to get where you're going.
That's awesome. And listeners, I'll have a link to Future Ready Schools website so that you can go back and take a look at this. A lot of partners involved in this organization that is focused on what GN is describing to you. And so there's lots of different segments to it. But everybody from NASSP, the National Association of Secondary School Principals, to the Elementary School Principals Association, and many, many more. So with that being said, let's shift to librarian. And so on the Future Ready Schools librarian webpage, a reader can't miss this statement. It says, unleashing the instructional leadership of librarians to foster schools that are future ready. Can you explain this expectation?
Yes, I'll start by saying, please erase the picture of the little old lady with the horn-rimmed glasses sitting on a stool and yelling at kids for overdue books.
Oh, come on.
Because I think that that's what a lot of people see when they think librarian. So the term changed from librarian to school librarian media specialist. A lot of them are called now digital learning specialists. But basically, it's the person that runs the space that is the media center or the library. These people are librarian. These librarians are instructional leaders. They are trained, for the most part, they're trained educators. It is a service certificate, but you have to have instructional design to get certified. You have to have courses in building curriculum. And you have to have an advanced degree. So everybody who's inside, who is a certified school librarian media specialist in the state of Georgia, is an instructional leader. They've been trained to be. So they're good enough at their job that they literally run a mini corporation inside the school. If you think about what a media center does, and most people don't think about what the media center does, but a media center runs a cash till. There's a book fair at least once or twice a year. You manage a staff. If you don't have a clerk, you have volunteers or student volunteers. You're managing sign in, sign out. You're delivering lessons. You're curating materials, making sure the school databases work. Many times you're the webmaster, and you're literally one person that sees every person who is involved in the school. You have FaceTime potentially with every parent, every teacher, every student, every administrator. So there really should be the face of the school. But what's happened over the last few years is that media specialists have gone in and shut their door and done their work, because in years past, they were required to. Media specialists couldn't leave the library to have lunch or anything. So they kind of got stuck into a silo, and it was just taken for granted that all these things would happen, and nobody realized that there's this very powerful instructional leader and mini manager in there running a whole little microcosm.
One of the things that's interesting about what you're talking about is actually, you know, sometimes the school administration has to understand that world that the library and media specialists can operate in, because otherwise mm-hmm. they might hold them back from being able to do that if they see them as just like the keeper of the books or the things that are in that space over there, or the keeper of the children in the morning and in the lunchtime and in the afternoon.
Right. And I think that that's been a big problem. There's a big focus going to any school library and media specialist event where we talk about advocacy, but Southerners don't brag. Southerners, and if we do, we humble brag. So Southerners don't put ourselves out there and say, hey, look, this is what I'm doing. And it's not bragging, but to advocate, to teach people what's going on. I remember standing up in front of the leadership in our district and saying, the media specialist is the hidden gem in your school, and started outlining what they know and what they've learned and what they do, and all around the Future Ready Librarian framework. And several principals came to me and said, I had no idea. I didn't know. So I think it's important. I would love to see the leadership training for an admin include a day in the life of the media center, because it truly should be the hub of the school.
I love that, because that, you know, it's one of the things that you learn quickly is that what sort of professional development, what sort of opportunities you have, not just for children. And what I want to do is, because a lot of times what will happen is there's this mindset that it's just about the kids, when actually you become a big part in the instructional training and professional development of the adults in the building. If given that opportunity. And, you know, it's funny because a long time ago, a media specialist, when I was a brand new principal, introduced me to this thing called Google Docs. And I forget exactly what it was called at the time, but that's what it became.
And Writely. It was called Writely.
There we go. And all I can remember was that it took a little time to chip away at the brain cells to get me focused on even just remembering my password. But so it was Writely, huh? I remember. Mm-hmm. I remember doing all that good stuff. And that's one of those big roles that media specialists can play, is introducing the staff to new things.
Absolutely.
Very good.
But media specialists have a hard time doing that if they're not empowered to go to professional development, if they're not given the relief to leave the media center and get out and collaborate with people and go to conferences. And I've seen many who have not been allowed to do that, or who have not been encouraged to do that, because it's truly an oversight. Nobody thinks about it.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. I mean, it's easily overlooked, or on purpose overlooked, because that's a place where we let, you babysit some of the kids during the day at different times, you know. And I've had to have discussions with classroom teachers about, don't just send people there. You got to check with the media specialist first to find out whether they even have an opportunity for the children to come in, aside from the classes that are coming in and stuff like that. So
one big eye-opening moment for us was there was a district initiative that was pushed out, and everybody was trained in this initiative, right? And without going into it, it was just something that everybody's supposed to know. If you work for our district, everybody knows it. Well, when I started talking to the media specialists, they're like, well, we watched the kids so that the quote real teachers could go to that training. And because there was no one who was a media specialist liaison, that no one ever meant to overlook them, but they did in fact get overlooked because they were watching the students during their planning periods so that the teachers would get that information. And they did kind of go get it out of the teacher's hands, but they didn't get the direct delivery.
Right. I think that's a common practice, and something that's, you know, got to be redirected. So let's use this now to shift into the tenets of a future ready librarian, because it gets into some specific ideas that the future ready librarian should be after or pursuing. And one of those tenets is that they curate digital resources and tools. Can you talk about this, what it means and what it looks like?
Sure. Well, there's, you know, tons of digital tools out there, but how do we know what works? And most elementary and middle and high school teachers really don't have time to get their hands and feet wet with new tools, unless that's just their passion. So, you know, every department or every team has that one quote techie person, But the school librarian can serve as this person. They can go use these things, find out about them, pilot them with a class, co-teach with a teacher, but actually using them and showing how they can be applied in the school setting. You know, what is Padlet good for? Not just here's Padlet, but what could you do with it? How does it fit to the curriculum? Because a school librarian media specialist is supposed to be familiar with the standards and know what they are and how to apply these digital tools. Curating them means that we put them in a format like a Google site or in some kind of shared format, a Symbaloo or something, that pushes them out to the teachers. So we're actually doing some of the work for the classroom teacher and making their world easier, making things easier for them. You know, the classic thing that a Georgia library media specialist does is forward the Galileo password. Hopefully, though, a future ready librarian not only is sending out the Galileo password, but also holding workshops about how to use Galileo and how Galileo is different for an elementary, middle, and high school student, and how teachers could use Galileo in their graduate programs, things like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. The you know, and it is one of those things, the idea of curating and kind of sifting through what's out there to help, you know, teachers identify what might be a better tool and how to use that tool. Because oftentimes, you know, the latest greatest thing, the latest shiny object will become their focus, and they don't necessarily use it the correct way because they haven't spent time learning how. So it just becomes maybe something that takes up time. And I can see where the Future Ready Librarian is really focused on trying to make sure that we don't spend our time doing that. Instead, we learn how to use it. Is that right? Kind of on the right track?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One example of that would be taking something like Kahoot or quizzes and sending out a really quick class opener. That's great. Kids love Kahoot. You can hear that music and the kids are like, yay, we're doing Kahoot today. But if you need something that is more than DOK1 level formative assessment, that might not be the best tool. Perhaps Google Forms would be better for that. So your school librarian can say, okay, if you're trying to test for this, this is your product. If you want to go deeper or you need written response, maybe you should try this. So that's just a concrete example of a way that a media specialist could serve a teacher.
I love that example. That is a perfect example. Thanks. So let's shift to another tenet. Another tenet is that Future Ready Librarians design collaborative spaces. I love this part. Talk about that just a little bit.
So you're going to expect me, if you've been around at all, to say makerspaces. And makerspaces are great and they're wonderful. We are, however, seeing makerspaces move out of the school library media center and into, especially in middle school, into STEM labs, or in elementary schools often are having STEM labs. So I want to talk about the learning commons at this point. The learning commons takes a physical space and makes it home for everybody. In a learning commons, you have zones. You have a collaborative zone where you can teach a small class or a large class of students. So that would look more like a traditional classroom. There's a seating space. There might be a projector. It's going to be teacher focused. But then you also have collaborative spaces for student-led activities, for small groups. So you might see kids gathered around a table that seats maybe 4 or 6 with a device that can plug into a monitor and show maybe a collaborative Google slide, or where they can present their own research or work collaboratively on a Google drawing, something like that. And then you also have spaces where a student can go in and just be quiet and be alone, or take a test, or turn their face to the wall and read a book. So you instead of having one media center that looks the same for everybody, you are serving different populations and different needs all at one time. Hopefully, the media specialist even has a collaborative space for teachers, or a place where teachers can come have a cup of coffee or a cup of hot tea and just talk and share without feeling so rushed. So the Learning Commons is a place where everyone from admin down to students work together or work separately, all in the same space.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's cool because I envision lots of different types of furniture in the media center instead of the more traditional. Here's some cubicles, here's some tables with chairs, and that's pretty much it. Instead, we have rooms dedicated to, you know, sitting how they want to sit. If you got beanbags or you got some other types of stuff, standing desks, any kind of different furniture, I guess, is one of the things that pops into my brain here.
One of the most innovative uses of that that I've found, I love to go visit other districts. And so I'll go to a district that has more funding and I'll see, you know, they're going to DEMCO and they're buying these, you know, collaborative stations. But I went to another system who is more rural and they had budget limitations. So they asked their construction kids to build collaborative tables on casters and put whiteboards on top of them so that students could come and collaborate on a table. And the cost of that was kept way, way down because the school itself paid for the materials. The construction kids built it, you know, made sure that it was engineered safe and all that good stuff, moved it up to the media center, and then the kids used it. Well, that's those tables serve double duty because during breakfast and lunch times, the media specialist covers them with a cloth and they actually, the kids can come in and have breakfast together and collaborate or whatever. And then during the day, they take the cloths off and they can use them for collaborative work tables.
Awesome. I love it. Very nice. Very nice. So while we're on this subject, do you have a favorite aspect of the Future Ready program? If so, what is it?
I think it is just all branches of the school system. So you have Future Ready librarians, you have Future Ready tech leaders, Future Ready instructional coaches, Future Ready district leaders. And it lets us all come to the table and say, what am I doing that might be in your lane? Or what are we overlooking that's in no one's lane? What can we do to all head the same direction? The beautiful thing about Future Ready is it doesn't tell you where you're going. It tells you how to get there. So every district is different. A rural district may have completely different goals, you know, and different outcomes for their students than a metro district. So it allows you to have those conversations and lets everybody work together, but also define space where everybody knows where to start. And I think everybody wants to improve schools. But when I saw the Future Ready initiative and wrapped my mind around it, I'm like, oh my goodness, now I know who's supposed to do this piece and who's supposed to do this piece. And some pieces do overlap. An instructional coach would overlap into technology, of course, because we're going to need tools and we're going to need the technology to people to make those safe for us and make sure that we're following all those rules that we need to. And then we're going to hop over, instructional coaches are going to hop over to the curricular piece and make sure that we're covering all the objectives that we need to. But it does give us a place to start having the conversations.
Very cool. So I want to get into something a little more serious now, because there may be some communities that may be, you know, considering elimination of the librarian or media specialist position because they start saying, well, do we really need this area? And we're looking at budget cuts, you know, and matter of fact, near where I work, there's a rather large city that about an hour away that actually started thinking about unfunding their libraries. What would you say to change their minds?
I would say do the research. If you look at even secular research, of course, there's educational research on this. Millennials are using the library at a larger rate than any other generation. It's not the time to defund libraries or to dissolve library programs. Also, build a relationship with your media specialist. If they're not doing what you envision, start that conversation. If you don't know what to envision, the Future Ready Librarian Framework is a great place to start. Again, it's not a prescription, it's a mindset. So start with the mindset of how you can serve the schools. We know that poverty influences literacy in such a huge way, and we can open those libraries to families, to homes, to communities. You're just overlooking the best tool that you have in the school. Imagine having a storyteller come in at night and having parents come in. There's so many things that we could use our school libraries for. We just have forgotten that those are supposed to be the center and the heartbeat of the school. But spend a day in your library. See who serves. See who comes in there. See which kids eat lunch in there and which kids come in to ask for help. See how many teachers come in and ask for help. Because again, so many media specialists have not advocated for what they do, and they just kind of wring their hands and they don't realize that, you know, what they do is so important. And then lastly, support your media specialist with the opportunity to collaborate, to go to conferences, and to get some really good professional learning. I know, being so involved with our RESA, I'm a member of North Georgia RESA. I, for years, was a member of Northwest Georgia RESA. We have media collaboratives every fall and spring in both of those. So the media specialists come together and talk about our program and talk about our challenges, talk about how to grow. There's a summer institute. The Georgia Library Media Association meets in the summer, And that's a great place to go and learn more about your craft and how to serve your teachers and students better.
That's awesome. And by the way, what I'd like to do real quick is just kind of give an explanation of what ERISA is for those who are listening to us outside of the state of Georgia.
You want me to do that, or you're going to do that?
Go ahead, and I'll follow up with anything.
I'm not even sure what ERISA stands for, but they're the lifeline for our professional development. I know it's Regional Education Service something. Is that right?
It's almost there. For my listeners, I'm the executive director of ERISA in the state of Georgia, and it's Regional Educational Service Agency. And what I was curious about is what I love is what you said, the lifeline for your professional development there. That's so cool. So sorry to put you on the spot, but I just, as a reference, basically there are many states, that have RESAs. They may have a different name. They're part of bigger organization that all typically they have the ESA in their name and something else in front. But the whole point is that it's, they were designed a long time ago to help rural populations, be able to pool their funds together to help them be able to address the needs together that they need. For example, the group that I'm over, there are 10 school systems that I work with that are on my board.
I had never had the opportunity to attend a ERISA event until I came to Georgia. And I was just, that's where I fell in love with the profession. I learned that I could literally pick from a menu and get better at my weak spots. And it was the most enlightening thing ever. And so I'm a big fan, even if I don't know what RESA stood for.
All's good. That wasn't a test. There's no, thank you. I thought of your cool reaction and comment there is awesome. So thank you for doing that. We've got, what I'd like to do is, let me just ask you this. If you had a chance to share with a group of superintendents about becoming a future ready school, what is one thing that you would want them to remember most when they left your talk?
I would say that future ready schools are built on communication, creativity, and collaboration. And communication is different than collaboration, because when you communicate something, you're telling, you're not necessarily listening. So collaboration allows everybody to come to the table. I don't think one person or even a team can truly lead a school. I mean, I know most schools have leadership teams or dream teams, but it really takes everyone's voice. And to get those people to open up to you takes building relationships. Next, we have to focus on the whole child. I'm the mom to a special needs student, and I'm the mom to a student who just flew through school with no problem. So I've seen both sides of the spectrum, and I would ask, are you including the arts and special needs services and CTAE and all of your electives in your conversation with your core curricular people? And are you including that school library media specialist and your instructional technology department? Because so many times we have little pockets of people that work in a silo, and we forget that they're part of the bigger picture. And lastly, I would say start with the media center. Have your meetings there. Bring that media specialist in. Because if you start with a future ready library, it's going to spread out.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's good stuff right there. So thank you, because that would take them away. And I know that what's interesting is that when you look at the future ready schools information, one of the things that they talk about is that the superintendents have a pledge that they're asked to take.
Yes.
So that would lead them to understanding a little bit more about what the organization's all about. So coming up, there are future ready school institutes across the U.S. And I understand there's one coming up in Georgia this fall. So what would an educator want to attend? Why would an educator want to attend one of these events, and kind of what happens at them?
Well, I'm not sure what happens. I'm going to my first one in October. But because our superintendent, Dr. Gilreath, did sign the Future Ready Pledge, I sent out the information, and we'll be taking a team of people from teaching and learning across the district operations, hopefully. We were all encouraged to sign up and take it. I do know that at the leadership institutes, they sit together and start helping you formulate your plan. On the Future Ready dashboard, there is a 5-step plan that gets you rolling with that in the district. And again, it's not an initiative with a, you know, finish line. It's a thought process. It's a mindset that you adopt. So if you have a strategic plan that you're doing every 3 to 5 years or every 5 years, Future Ready can be the framework for that. So at the institute, we'll be working through those plans together. And my understanding is that we'll do it as a district, that we'll be teamed up with our district working together.
Excellent. And I appreciate you sharing that information. That's cool. So we're going to have to, after you attend the Institute, we're going to have to talk again. How about that?
That'd be great. That'd be perfect.
I look forward to it. So as we're closing up, I got a few more questions, but one of the things I'd like to basically ask you is if a listener would like to find out more about Future Ready Librarians, where should they look? And if someone would like to reach out to you, what would be the best way?
Okay. FutureReady.org is the website for Future Ready Schools, but the Twitter star for Future Ready Librarians is Shannon McClintlock. And there are others, but I am on Twitter, so I follow lots of these people. So if you follow me very long, you'll see that. The hashtag FutureReadyLibs, so that's all together, hashtag FutureReadyLibs, is a great hashtag to start finding these people and then following them.
Excellent. And I will have all that information in the show notes. So once again, you don't have to, if you're in Georgia, we have a hands-free law now. So don't try to reach over there, but I'll have it all in my show notes. Okay. So thanks. So last two questions. Here's the first one. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers, and these are people who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Oh, goodness. I want to go back and ask my first 5 years worth of students to forgive me. I think firstly, learn to listen what your students say to you verbally and nonverbally. A lot of times students talk through their behavior. So if you learn what they're trying to say, if they're clinging to you, or if they're acting out against you, they're probably needing you more than you know. And find mentors in the areas where you know you're weak. I am not a good math teacher, and I need support there. A few years ago, I moved from a middle grades position down to a primary position, and I really needed support teaching students how to read. I had not been taught that in the 90s. We kind of had one class, and it was like good luck, because back then we used Basel readers. So I didn't know how to support a student, and I had to swallow my pride, go next door to the 25-year-old and say, I need you to teach me how to do this. Learn to set boundaries, or this job will consume you. And lastly, ask for support until you get it. Nobody can help you if you don't speak up.
Awesome advice. I love that. And yeah, there is nothing more humbling than, I like what you said, going to the 25-year-old to ask for advice or help. But hey, you do what you got to do.
That's right.
So last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
I have a lot of teachers that influenced me, but my most influential was my first grade teacher. Her name was Miss Alpha McCoy, and later she married, and her name was Miss Alpha McCoy Ray. And she taught until about 3 or 4 years ago. She taught over 40 years.
Wow.
But she told me that I was smart and encouraged me to read, and I can still close my eyes and see the word excellent written crooked on a paper and going up and asking her what that meant. And she says, it means that you did a really good job. And she just changed my life. I'm the first person to graduate from high school in my family, and I'm the first person to get a college degree. So I can't imagine who I would have been had she not spoken truth and just encouraged me and supported me.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Jeanne, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. I enjoyed hearing about
Future. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I enjoyed hearing about Future Ready Schools and librarians, and wish you the best in all that you do. And I look forward to talking to you again in the fall.
Okay, I can't wait.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.